Welcome to Story Comic Presents, where we interview amazing storytellers and artists. This is episode 345. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're excited to have with us the internationally acclaimed and celebrated comic book writer and game designer, Mark Maya.
Hey! Thanks for having me on. This is very, very exciting.
Right. So this is exciting stuff, Mark. You actually launched your very first Kickstarter, and it was funded within the first day.
Well, 33 hours, actually.
Okay.
Exactly. All 33 right. hours. But the first day was almost there. It was like that last $800. It was like the crawl. Like,
getting right to the top.
So, it funded. So we're funded, and that's great.
But so you've already got the Project We Love sticker on it, and as I said, this is your first one, but you're not a stranger to Kickstarter. You've actually backed well over 100 Kickstarters in the past already.
Yeah, I got an email. Yeah, I backed 165 something like that, and I got an email from Kickstarter, and it was like, congratulations, you're funded, type of thing, and one of the emails said, oh, you're in there as a super backer, you're in the top 3% of people who back projects. So I was like, wow, that's cool. A friend of mine has backed over 2,000 projects.
Jeez Louise.
So if I'm in the top 3%, he's definitely in the 1%.
Yeah.
So that's impressive. And it's mostly board games. I have backed some comic book projects, but I mostly back board game projects. But that's because of our YouTube channel, Board Game Coffee. So,
right. And so, talk to us a little bit about this, your comic book. You've already have issues 1 and 2. Well, book 1 and 2 is already what your Kickstarter is about.
Yep.
So-called Living. It's a pretty interesting concept. You actually have, as you call, there's vampires and werewolves and supernatural creatures living with what you call the quote unquote normies among
that's
us.
So the normies.
So talk to us a little bit about what the story is all about.
When I sat down to write this, I was like, what if we lived in a world where vampires, werewolves, and zombies are part of our everyday? They live with us like regular citizens. So they're not in hiding. They have a place in our society, and it's just part of our everyday. So what would that be like? And that's kind of like how I started. And and the story, like book one, you can actually read for free on Global Comics.
Okay.
You go to Global Comics and type in So-Called Living, and you can read issue one for free. And it's not really it's a spoiler for issue one, but you can go read issue one. It's just, it's the jumping off point for the rest of the story. It's not like the main premise, or well, it starts the story. And basically Jack gets bitten by, or turned into a vampire.
Okay.
And then he's got to learn how to adapt to this life as a vampire. And his life wasn't that great to begin with. Hence the title, So-Called Living. It's got kind of a double entendre there. Because we'd say, like, if we live these average, like, go-nowhere lives, we'd say, well, I guess this is my so-called living. And since he's not actually alive because he's a vampire, but he's still, you know, among us. So again, that's where so-called living. And so he has to learn how to live as a vampire. But although these creatures that we have in this world follow the same kind of rules and tropes of, like, or not the tropes, but the same rules of like vampires, where, you know, they garlic bad, if you have to be invited in, sun is bad, that type of thing, werewolves, silver bullets, the whole, that they follow the rules, right? But the way the world around them perceives them or interacts with them is completely different, because their attitudes are different, because their environment is different. They haven't been shut out. They're just part of society. So the vampires you meet in book one are more like, they'd fit more along like the lines of like the cast members of Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
More so than Bram Stoker's Dracula, you know, all deep and broody and like, come to me. Like, they're not that kind of vampire. They're more like, at least the two you meet, they're more like bikers. Right. So, and Nick, one of the main vampires, he's kind of like, if you imagine Butcher from The Boys, he's like Butcher. That's his personality.
When you came up with the idea, did you just come up with an idea of a situation in an environment, or did you think of a protagonist and think about what their story was going to be? What was the first?
The way I handled this was I built the world. Like, I gave myself the premise of how this world is. Then I built out the characters and I gave them personalities. I gave them a way of dressing, how they look. I made out character sheets for myself and then I put them in this world. And in my head, the way I write is I watch them. I set them in a situation. So I was like, okay, Jack is with his girlfriend getting fries at like this, one of those trucks where you just go up and order food, and like a fast food truck. So that's where it starts. And at some point he gets turned into a vampire. And then, so I don't necessarily have an end goal when I start, but I do along the way. I was like, okay, now I see where I want this to go. But basically in my head, I'm just throwing these characters together and I'm like, what would happen if he met this guy? How would that interaction go down? So for me, it's a bit of discovery myself. So I feel like I'm just watching these guys. I was like, oh, he's going to do this. And okay, he's going to say this. And then what if he says this? Because there's two parts actually in book one where if Jack or anybody doesn't understand something or something gets corrected, instead of like, here's an example. I wrote in book one, Jack says a line where he's like, I guess you can catch more bees with honey. And I wrote that in the original script. And a friend of mine read it. And he's like, it's flies. I guess you can catch more flies with honey. And I was like, what? He's like, you said bees. It's supposed to be flies. And I was like, oh, right. Like, I knew that, but that's not what I wrote. So instead of changing it, I let Jack say that. And I had his girlfriend correct him. And it was a similar conversation where she was like, it's flies, not bees. And then it goes to feed his character how she's kind of overbearing and controlling, and he's a bit of a dink. So when she corrects him, he's like, well, I don't know, because, you know, bees like honey. Why else would they make it? That's his logic. And she's like, you're an idiot. So that's the error I just worked into the story. So how I figure things out is how the characters figure things out. And there was another part where I put in because their names are Jack and Jill. And Nick finds us. He's like, wait. Nick's the vampire. He's like, wait a second. You're Jack and Jill? And his buddy, the other vampire, doesn't know what he's talking about. He's like, do you know these two? He's like, you know, like Jack and Jill. Like, you know, fetch a pill of water. He's trying to explain to him. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet. The guy's like, what's a tuffet? You know, three blind mice. He's like, one guy, basically he has no concepts of fairy tales. He's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But that was the thing. And I got that out of me telling somebody, oh, their name's Jack and Jill. And I told somebody that and they're like, okay, am I supposed to know what that means? I was like, you know, like Jack and Jill. Like from the fairy tale rhyme or whatever.
Nursery rhyme.
Yeah, nursery rhyme. And they're like, what? And I said, you know, Jack and Jill went up the hill, fetch a pail of water. And like, oh, like they got it. But at first it didn't clue in. So I used that in the story. It's like, what if like Casper doesn't clue in, but instead of not actually cluing in, he has no idea what he's talking about. So I worked that into the story. And then that part about like when he says like, what's a tuffet? That was my question. I was like, I don't know what a tuffet is. Because as I was writing it, I was like, what's a tuffet? So Casper's going to say, what's a tuffet?
Right.
So that's how I write.
One of the coolest things about writing stories about vampires or werewolves is that you have to create a history or a mythos. Did you do that as well? Did you create like the origin of where vampires came from and werewolves and all that stuff as well?
I didn't go too much into the depths of like their origins of where they came from, because it's like everybody already accepts that werewolves exist and vampires exist. Like you
Okay.
watch, you go see superhero movies and they're making every other one's an origin movie. But when was the last time you saw an origin of a vampire? Just somebody got bit by a vampire and but you never
Right.
asked where the first vampire came from. Like they've done it. You know, they was like, oh, I did this and I praised some demon turned whatever their stories are. They've done it, but so many times they don't. It's just like you just accept, oh, vampires.
Right.
You know, oh, that's it. Like zombies are usually some sort of chemical or you know disease that
Right.
got loose or something. But a lot like so, I didn't go too much into that because I'm borrowing from what exists. I'm not trying to reimagine the wheel. I'm just
Right.
using the wheel that's there, but I'm changing the person. I'm updating their personality. Because
Right.
basically, their origin is the same as what you know, what me and you know as a vampire or a werewolf. But the difference is they grew up in a world, or they were, I guess, not grew up in a world, but exist in a world where everybody knows they exist. They're not living in the shadows. There's not like just two of them. And you're like, oh my God, it's this thing that nobody's going to believe me. Everybody's going to believe you. Like, you could work with a vampire, you could work with a werewolf, and they know. That you know there's not a secret. It's like, I know you're a
Right.
person. You could be a werewolf right now. You could be a vampire. So that's the way it is. It's just everybody's living together. And I've compared it to True Blood before, but True Blood, they're still in hiding, even though people know about it. It's still like they're not really accepted. But that's not the deal here. There are some people that don't accept them, but those people that don't accept them are treated in the same light as like racists would be today, right?
Right.
Those people that just don't accept you for your race. You
Right.
can't, that's just the world we live in. So that's the world they live in as well. Although
Right.
the majority of people do accept them for what they are, there are people who would just don't like vampires because they're racist toward vampires.
Have you done a spin on like powers and weaknesses as well as compared? Is there anything that's like a Mark Maya-ish, this is your type of
There's
vampire or anything like that?
Most of the what I made my vampires, like what I would say is my vampires, is all in their personality. When I created the characters, I wanted them to be like the vampires and werewolves you know. So most of my spin on them is their characters, again, based on their environment. So it's a lot of their personalities and how they react is the difference. So one of the things where that's addressed is if you look at your Twilight vampires, most vampire things. Either the vampires are like super savage, like what is it, 30 Days of Night, right? They're like super savage monsters, and there's just tons of them, and they just go in these feeding frenzies. It's like Shark Week, but with vampires. Or they're like Bram Stoker's or Twilight, and they're all like, "But I love you, and we're immortal, and I love you, and I need blood," right? There's those two personalities. But these guys, again, they're like take no shit, cool guy vampires. Yeah, we're immortal. You know, we're strong. We do that. That's how they are. And Nick, because he's such the cool guy, there's one point where Jack has been newly changed, and Jack is finds out. I don't want to spoil this part, but he finds out something that's would make a normal person cry. So he's like, and Nick is like, oh no, you don't. He's like, don't you go turn forest fairy on me. And Jack is like, what? He's like, stops. He's like, what are you, forest fairy? And he's like, you know, pouty mouthed, cloak wearing vampires. Because, and he's describing basically like your Twilight vampires, your Bram Stoker's, like those vampires, your typical, like, I wear the cloak and I'm so mystical and emotional. He's like, that's not us, so that ain't you. That's his. Because like basically we made you, so that ain't you, that ain't us. Because he hates those type of vampires. So suggesting that those vampires exist in this world. So it's same way like a biker wouldn't care for like a prep boy that you know has tennis lessons and wears the scarf around his neck. That's
Right.
how Nick thinks of these vampires. So he's like, no, don't like him. Doesn't like that way of living. He's like, no, don't like it. It's uncool. So And he breaks it down to them like, oh, because you're a vampire, you don't feel feelings like that no more. And Jack's like, really? He's like, no. So, because Jack was automatically like, oh, I should be sad. And then he's like, actually, yeah, you're right. I'm not sad at all about what just happened. And he's like, yeah, it doesn't work like that. Basically, it's like he's rewired a bit. So it's like being a vampire makes you more callous.
Okay.
So only the most real of which you're going to learn as the book goes along, only the most real of emotions comes through. So only your most closest of friends matters to you. You care less of what happens to the odd stranger, right? That just walk by like, meh. they die. Like, yeah. I'm not, so they don't get attached. So unless you're really mean something, unless there's an actual real bond, it means
nothing. That in a way, it's kind of like a benefit or weakness that your vampires would have then.
Yeah, I guess, because it's like a survival thing for them, because if you think vampires have to like feed on the blood of others to survive, that part of their evolution was that they became cold to that. It's just them killing and sucking, draining somebody of their blood isn't a bad thing. That's just their way of living,
right?
So yeah. they've evolved to become callous to that and doesn't affect them emotionally like it would me and you. Like if you just had to kill somebody right now, you probably wouldn't feel too good about yourself. But if you were turned into a vampire, you'd be like, hey.
Anytime you have a werewolf and a vampire in a story, it seems as though like the presumption is that werewolves and vampires are mortal enemies. Does that exist in your world, or are they just
there? Is you'll see it coming on, because I don't touch on werewolves a lot in the first two issues. They come out in full force in issue four, because I've written the scripts. Those books don't exist. So, but now that I've funded book one and two, I can go on and do book three and four. So that's the idea, is I keep funding the books to do, like, if I can fund three and four, I can do five and six and seven and eight. It's eight books total.
Okay.
So when you do see the werewolves, there is a friction between them and the vampires in the story, but not because they're vampires.
Okay.
It's because one of the vampires in the story really screwed over the werewolves, and the werewolves are not happy. And when you meet the werewolves, I think you'll really like them. They're my favorite characters to write for.
Okay.
They are so much fun to write for. Mind you, they do spend a lot of time in their human form. But because them being werewolves isn't the main part of their story. It's not what defines their character. But I don't want to say anymore, because it's kind of a surprise when it happens.
Okay.
So yeah. and then you'll be like, oh, I see now. But one thing I can let you in on, that's, it's a subtle joke in the first one. It starts in the first one, but you wouldn't understand it as a joke until you read the other issues. But this is not really a story spoiler, is at the in the end of like last two, three pages of the book, that you'll see a zombie in the pool. And he's in the pool at this hotel. He's like up to here in the water, just standing there. Like, he's just like not doing anything. He's just in the pool. And the idea is that zombies have this like affinity for pools. Like, they're drawn to pools. Like, leaves fall into pools. Zombies just wander into pools. So getting zombies out of your pool is a common thing, like getting leaves out of your pool. So you'd be like, oh my God. You get these guys again in my pool. So like, I have an idea of a future scene where some guy's got the net. He's just trying to get a zombie out of the pool.
And so you got zombies, you got werewolves, you got vampires, there's creatures of horror.
There's poltergeists, ghosts, and this is not going to make much sense to you right now, but there's bunnies. And here, Giles. This is one of the things that you can get on the Kickstarter.
Right. Okay.
It's a keychain. It's black and white acrylic. So we make these ourselves. So this is just a random piece that we were testing the bunny on. So like the back is just junk.
Right.
But the idea is this keychain, if you buy this keychain on the Kickstarter, not only do you get a cool keychain, but you become on the back, it's supposed to say, which it will say in the final, again, this is just the test. It'll say so-called living official member of the Blood Bunny colony. And if you're a member of the Blood Bunny colony, then you get discount. I'm not sure what it is yet, and I was clear about this in the Kickstarter, or clear about not being clear. In all future so-called living Kickstarters, you're either going to get a discount or a special item or something. So you'll get a keychain for sure. And then in addition to that, you're going to get some sort of benefit. I don't know what that benefit is. Maybe all your books come automatically autographed. Maybe you get a print that's not available to anybody else. Maybe you get a discount on your books. I'm not sure what that is, but I do want to start this kind of like loyalty program, kind of like Costco.
Cool.
You buy into it, you support us by getting the keychain. And we want to give back by saying, hey, you're an official member. Here's your discounts for being a member.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty cool.
So yeah, so bunnies play a part, but that's bunnies are the biggest secret in the whole series.
And so-called living, there's got to be some gears in your head about thinking about how can I make this into a game? Is there something like that?
I funny enough is like I thought of that because being a game designer,
Right.
that people, you're not the first one to ask me that. Like my friends is like, oh, we're gonna do a game for them, and the fact that I have a board game channel, because I have plans on designing my own board game eventually, because I'm a game designer, but I don't come at it from the, I didn't start as a programmer, so I'm not a programmer. I started as an animator, so I became a game designer because of my understanding of like game mechanics, but I'm not a programmer, I'm an artist. So, and a writer. So, but board games is something I could do without programming. So if anything, people are like, hey, you're gonna do a so-called living board game? And my answer is always no. And the reason is that because it's so-called living is a dark comedy, right? It's got a bit of like, it's kind of like Friends meets Cabin in the Woods. But as much as I love Cabin in the Woods, one of my favorite movies, I love Friends, one of my favorite comedies. I don't want to play a Friends game or a Cabin in the Woods game. I don't. Like, I like my games being a different flavor. So I don't know if I could, but what I'd love to work on, and I've done this before, is do a TV pilot for So-Called Living.
And so, because you mentioned that too, is like if you look at the so-called living, your Kickstarter, the comic books itself, they actually have a very, your artist has a very kid-friendly feel to it. But this is not, this comic book, to be clear, is not for kids, correct?
No, there's cursing in there, and there's some mild decapitation, but we don't have gore necessarily. Like we don't go into detail of guts and blood and blah. But not that I'm against that. I'm not against it. Nothing offends me. I'm into everything. Do you know what I mean? Like if it's and so. But the reason I didn't put it in there because it doesn't match the tone of the story. So whenever there is any sort of violence, it's kind of done like Warner Brothers violence. If there's decapitation, you don't see like guts and blood. It's just like, oh, the head's gone. There's a clean cut. Maybe there'll be a drip of blood, like something small. But yeah, there's the Kickstarter and all the variant covers that we offer.
I am really curious about the bunnies, though.
Yeah, if you go in there, see, there's the add-ons and there's the bunnies. Boom, there's our keychain. See, yeah, it looked pretty good. That was the concept. That was just concept art. And there's the final. So, well, we're pretty bang on.
See?
Yep.
So, as you
There's
say,
some
so this.
decapitation right there. That's a bouncing head.
So, this is for issue one and two,
Yep.
and you have an estimate because it's already done, basically, right?
Correct.
So when is issue, so are you going to be doing issues three and four? Or are you just going to be doing issues three, or how is this for the next?
So every Kickstarter is going to be two issues. So every time you go, you'll buy issues 3 and 4, and then 5 and 6, and 7 and 8.
Okay.
And that list you saw of interviews, I will be adding this interview to that playlist.
Those are some friends of mine. Morgan Quaid actually did my intro.
Design. Morgan's funny. He's great. He's gotta love that accent.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and the Wednesday Night Review is that Wednesday. He's a really good guy. I know all these folks. Yeah.
Wednesday Night. I get it because as a board game person, like I am friends with all of the board game media people.
Right.
So it's funny because sometimes I'll go to shows and people will be talking to me like, oh, I love this show. I love that person. I was like, yeah, they're friends of mine. I was like, I'll text them. Do you want to meet them? I just do that and I'll come on over. And
so Mark, are you going to be having another Kickstarter coming out this year then?
Right? Hopefully, yeah. I want to have it released this year. So now that we're funded, Marco has started working on the other books.
Okay.
And the relationship with me and Marco is, and I like Marco's a great artist. I like Marco. We get along fine. He takes criticism great. He never quite, I'm like, Marco, change it from this to this. He's like, yep, done. But Marco's in Italy. So that's why there's no autographed version of his work. Cause right. I didn't offer that because I was like, I can't get it. Cause like the books are going to come to me. Right. So I can't ship them to Italy and back, or the cost of that autograph would be a lot.
So Mark, really excited for your Kickstarter success. That's amazing.
Me too. I'm
really
I'm
excited to see this. Yeah. And really excited to see it progress and seeing your new chapters coming out. Any final thoughts, Mark?
Final thoughts is, I'll say the same thing I've said, told my family, which they have trouble understanding, is even though the book is funded, we still need your support. Because 5,000 was our minimum amount. Right. But like, even if we got 5,000, we're still in the hole, but it's a project that I'm very confident about. It's a great story. There's no part of me thinks that this is not a great story. It is a great story. You can read issue 1 for free. You can try it out for yourself. Like there's 5 pages here. And if you scroll at the bottom of those pages, there's a link to the first book. So you can just go read the first book.
Right.
And so if you scroll, you'll see it. It's coming. There it is. It says click here. It says read book 1 free now. And it goes right to Global Comics. There you go. Wow. You can read issue 1 right now for free. And if you like it, then support us on Kickstarter so we can actually get these things printed, and then you'll get issue 2. So the plan is to keep issue 1 for free forever. So people can just find it, they can read it, they can test it. Because the problem with, at least the problem I have, like the barrier that I see for indie comics is I'm an unknown writer. These are unknown characters. So people right. are always a little hesitant because there's so many of us, and not like, to be honest, not all stories are great. It's just a fact. And it's not just because we're indie. There's like not all Marvel stories or DC stories or whatever stories are great. Right. But the thing is, I can pick up a story that's written by Brian Michael Bendis, Robert Kirkman, Mark Miller, and I know what I'm getting because I know those writers. Or I can pick up like a Batman book, or I can pick up a Spider-Man book, and I kind of know the tone of the book I'm getting because I know those characters. But as an indie, right. you don't know my characters, you don't know my writer. So I want to give you first issue 1 for free. So you get to know me as a writer, you get to know the characters, and then you could just jump in. As you can see there, it says available at the very top of the last page, it says available March 26th, which is a few days ago.
Now, so then if somebody is watching or listening to this after your Kickstarter's been completed and they want to read the book, they want to read So-Called Living, where is the best place they could go to actually get their own copies?
If this all goes to plan, there should be a late pledge button available on the Kickstarter page. And I believe we'll also have, if my wife gets it working, we're going to have the ability to buy the books from our socalledliving.com website. And okay. if you see us at shows, but again, I'm Canadian, so most of the shows I'm going to be are in Canada. So if you're Canadian and you're watching this and you see me at a show, you can get the issues there. And again, I'll be launching another Kickstarter. And when I launch the Kickstarters for book 3 and 4, I'll also offer issues 1 and 2. So there'll be a package to get 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay, cool.
If you want. So, and so you'll be able to get it on Kickstarter for a while until the series is over. So that's, I guess that's the best way to get it. And if you want anything else from me, you can reach me at, you can reach me through our YouTube channel, which is Board Game Coffee. We have a YouTube channel, but mm-hmm. specializes in board games, not comic books, but you can reach us out through there. And that's just, there's a lot of ways to contact us. Contact us through the Kickstarter page. So anything that's so-called living online or Board Game Coffee, those are two avenues to reach me and my wife.
Excellent. Well, Mark, this has been fantastic, and you got to come back on when you do your next Kickstarter. This has been amazing chatting with you.
It has been. And you know what? We're only clocked at like 45 minutes right now. And you know, minus your editing, we're probably about 42 minutes, but we've been talking for almost 2 hours now.
I know we have.
It took us a while before we actually hit record.
I know.
But the last thing I have to say is So-Called Living is a good story. It's a dark comedy. If you want to check it out, it's free. You won't be disappointed. And Marco Leone's art is great, and it only gets better. So now that he's used to the characters, he's so good. He's just nailing it every time.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's awesome. I might send one of my own. So I'd be like, oh, I see a little baby.
Oh, you're going to say goodnight to me? Right, hang on. Daddy's going to timestamp this.
It's all right. I get it.
All right. All right. Goodnight. Love you. Mwah. All right. See you in the morning.
All right. That's cute.
The cute. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I said to watch. Make sure he doesn't touch my Legos.
my little guy has been talking more and more. Like, well, he's like 2 and a half, but he was a late talker.
Yeah.
But it's cute when he just says things like, you know, good night, daddy. I love you, daddy.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, they just melt my heart.
I just saw this. I love watching these. It talks about how if you're roughhouse with your kids, it actually builds up their self-esteem and confidence.
So, yeah, I saw that. I saw that too.
Yeah. You saw that too, yeah. Yeah, so I guess we're on like the same like the same dad like
video shorts. Yeah, that works out. We definitely roughhouse. Yeah. Until I'm too tired, I'm like, I'm tired. Yeah. So you got an old dad. So I can't do this. And he's like my